This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor calling Felix Light of CBS News and the Moscow Times. He is in Uzbekistan, the most populous of the Central Asian republics, once upon a time part of the Soviet Empire. Now independent Uzbekistan, the capital, Tashkent. However, Felix has traveled to architectural gems that take all the way back to the third millennia BCE, 5,000 years old, major city-states, and he's in one of them, Bukhara, which has a mysterious background and a lot of history in the 20th century. Right now, Felix, I envy you in Bukhara in the spring weather. You've been touring the parts of Uzbekistan that are architectural gems. What have you discovered that especially surprises you, Felix? Good day to you.
Good day to you, John. Good day to you. Well, you know, certainly I think I've discovered something of an interest, you know, in Islamic architecture. You know, as you said before, you alluded to earlier, you know, it really is a sort of a civilization of its own. And you've got some incredible sort of stuff out here. And it's extraordinary to think that, you know, somewhere like this was, you know, part of the Soviet Union not so very long ago, very much a sort of a European country, you know, part of the same country as places like, you know, Latvia and Estonia. You know, it's a really extraordinary sort of place. And I know you share a very, very sort of fond view of your time in Uzbekistan, and I would very much encourage any sort of listeners who have the opportunity to visit. It's a wonderful part of the world.
Yes, and it's quickly modernizing. What do the young people of Uzbekistan want? Facebook, Amazon, and streaming movies. That's what they want, just like American and British teenagers. But now we go to the news. The news from Moscow is grim in all directions about the war in Ukraine.
Indeed.
I want to start with the news that takes us back to the Soviet Union days and a failure early on in Vladimir Putin's time as leader of the Russian Federation. That is the sinking of a submarine, a nuclear-powered submarine called the Kursk. We're not going to review those facts, although it was a tragedy with the loss of many lives. But an item in the Moscow Times pointing to the fact that the relatives, the mothers and the families of the sailors of the Moskva are now seeking answers about what happened to their children. What have they learned so far, Felix?
Well, you know, it's a very sort of fraught case. You know, the Russian government has made moves to classify sort of all information about casualties in the war, including, of course, these casualties incurred aboard the Moskva, the cruiser that was sunk the other week. You know, I think this comparison to the Kursk is a very, very important one. You know, I've heard myself sort of the comparison being made with, you know, the Kursk. You know, I was just talking this morning, actually, to a sort of a Russian political exile here in Uzbekistan who was sort of saying, you know, it's almost sort of ironic, you know, and I think he was indulging a bit of wishful thinking, saying the Kursk, you know, this scandal where sort of 200 young men were killed aboard a submarine, you know, that sank due to incompetence, sort of was very much the first scandal of President Putin's reign in office. And perhaps he thought that this scandal around the loss of the Moskva, you know, which really shouldn't have happened, is an extraordinary oversight from the point of view of the Russian Navy, would he hoped be sort of Putin's last scandal, you know, the one that sort of drives him out of office. Now, I don't think it's sort of that critical a situation for the Russian president, but it is an awkward situation, no doubt. You know, it does show the Russian military is, you know, deeply incompetent, and it angers people, you know, because throughout this case, they've really sort of just showed a real cynical sort of disregard for the lives of the young men lost on that ship. You know, sort of right now, there's just no sort of public sort of open admission about what happened. And you hear of sort of families who are simply not told what's happened to their sons, and they're just sort of sent to go through hospital wards and sort of find their young men. So, you know, an extraordinary sort of fallout here, and a really sort of, I think, emotive case this Moskva cruiser has turned into.
Felix is in Central Asia. However, he mentions that he's had a conversation with a Russian who's emigrated to Central Asia, at least momentarily. This points to not one but two items in the Moscow Times right now about Russians, educated and well-to-do Russians, or Russians of means, traveling to the former Soviet Union empire to wait out the crisis and also to avoid the tattletaling that's going on if you speak in any fashion dissenting voices about the Ukraine war. There are two items in the Moscow Times right now. One about Russians in Armenia fleeing in Yerevan, the capital of Armenia, and the other about Central Asian migrants, where Felix is. And Felix, this connects to what you found in Istanbul when you were recently in Turkey. Also Russians going there, so they're not just the former Soviet cities, they're all cities along the border. Would you say these are growing numbers, that the word is getting back home, that it's time to get out?
Well, yeah, certainly. You know, I think we're probably past the peak in the sense that I think in, you know, about a month ago, the start of March, where things were really sort of, you know, unclear. There was talk of sort of martial law and closing of the Russian border. You know, that was probably the peak of this emigration. And you really, at that point, you had sort of Istanbul, Tbilisi, the capital of Georgia, Yerevan in Armenia, all these cities really sort of swimming in Russian immigrants, quite frankly. You know, there were enormous numbers. You know, you were looking at something like $4,000 for a one-way flight from Moscow to Istanbul. So extraordinary numbers were there. And you know what you have now, you know, with Central Asia, it's a much smaller sort of population of Russians, but it is a very real one. And it's almost quite ironic because, you know, on the one hand, these Central Asian countries, you know, to put it mildly, are not democratic and in many ways are no more free than Russia is. But also, you know, they're not traditional sort of holiday destinations for sort of Russians. You know, Russians go to Istanbul, Russians go to Georgia. They don't really go to Uzbekistan. In fact, Uzbekistan is seen, you know, more than anything as sort of almost just a source of sort of cheap migrant labor, really. You know, a lot of Uzbeks come to Russia to work in sort of the construction industry or, you know, in this hospitality business. And so, you know, this is almost a very ironic kind of turning around of the trend, you know, a sort of a clamor for sort of for freedom of a kind in Uzbekistan among Russians.
Yes, the emigration story will grow because, as we know, after the fall of the Tsarist Empire, the emigres from Russia flowed into Western Europe and became extremely famous. One other story in the Moscow Times, and there's all the tragedy of Ukraine in the Moscow Times, and I recommend it to everyone, but this story is surprising. The fires of Siberia have started again. Felix, last summer, we had those enormous fires that were so big, the smoke was blowing across the Bering Sea. There was fear at the time, and I talked to the editor of the Siberian Times at Novosibirsk, that the fires would never go out, that the peat underneath the forest would burn all winter. I believe that could be part of the driver now, but there's a big article about how the public in Siberia and across Russia is protesting again. And you remember we touched on the fact that the Kremlin was paying attention last year. Are they paying attention this year?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, of course, the Russia of last year and the Russia of this year are very different places. You know, this is a country at war we're talking about. The bandwidth, if you like, for the government to sort of address these problems isn't sort of, you know, the same. And there'll be less sort of, I think, official interest sort of in these questions of sort of wildfires. That being said, you know, I think we talked quite a lot last year about how much anger sort of this kind of these sort of stories of sort of, you know, environmental degradation cause in Russia. You know, they're an enormously sort of emotive topic. And I don't think that potential to, you know, annoy people, to sort of drive them out to take to the streets is going to change, you know, whether the country's at war or not. Because, you know, of course, the government is still pretending that there is no war. All there is a special military operation, you know, and sort of, you know, things can continue as normal, blah, blah, blah. You know, sort of a ludicrous stand to take at the same time when you're, of course, locking people up for, you know, contradicting you on the war. But, you know, this stuff sort of remains important. It retains its ability to influence people. And I think it's very possible that we'll see sort of people getting very angry. You know, and that's obviously the human angle. But you've got to remember, you know, this is not normal. You know, it is April. This is not wildfire season. Wildfire season starts in June. And so this is, you know, the consequence, I think, of a warming planet that Russia, you know, is really at the forefront of in those Siberian forests.
Felix Leit, CBS News, Moscow Times. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.